How did Artie Lang outlive both Bob Saget and Norm MacDonald?
Eating those Philly cheesesteaks. that's funny.
Crazy, right?
That is
crazy. He did so much coke his nose fell off. All right, this is the fastest growing surf podcast in North America worldwide.
Thanks for having me in.
Midlife Surfer.
Midlife Surfer.
Eric, you're back. A lot of people asked.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Back.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back here in Santa Cruz, California. Sunny Santa Cruz, California.
How old are you, Eric?
I'm 35.
All right, cool.
Yep, turned 35 last month.
All right, so Eric turned 35 last month. It's been a while since you've been on the podcast, and I get multiple requests for you to come back. People like what you have to say.
Cool.
And I like having you here as well, too. I guess we'll start off with, asking you what's new, dude.
Not a whole lot. Just the day in, day out of being a 35-year-old dad to two kids and stretched for time. And
what about your new piano hobby?
Hey, I've been spending a lot of time on that.
Have you?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I think about like the midlife surfer, being a midlife person in this stage of life, you know, there's a lot of different things you look into. Maybe surfing is a new hobby. For me, I've picked up a new hobby, which is playing the piano. This is something awesome. I would encourage any midlife person to do, not specifically the piano, but I would say reflect on your life and think about the things that you would have liked to do before and realize that it is not too late to learn something new, to take on something new. So I participated in music as a youth, like playing. I played the saxophone for many years. Right. I sang in ensembles through high school and college. And music's always been important to me. But, I went to nursing school. The schedule there wasn't conducive to being in music programs or recitals or whatever. I was always at the hospital.
Right.
So I kind of let it go by the wayside. And I had always wanted to take piano lessons because I feel like anywhere you go, there's a piano around. Mm-hmm. Like saxophone's not a super practical instrument. You don't go to someone's house, especially during COVID, and be like, hey, you got a saxophone. Can I put my mouth on that thing and play a couple tunes? Like,
oh. Also, saxophone is like, it's kind of like acoustic drums. You can't play it quietly. It's like once you, it requires it to be loud. You can't play the drums without it being like abrasive to the
ears. Yeah, I can see
that.
Unless
you got one of those electronic Roland sets or something
like that. Sure,
sure. But piano's an incredibly, practical, pretty cool instrument. So did you play piano as a kid, you said?
So I took, my brother took piano lessons for many years and my parents enrolled me. And I was a challenging child. Like I had big opinions about the world. And, when my brother went off to school and got to leave piano lessons, I was like, why do I have to go? Like he doesn't have to take lessons and practice anymore. Like, why am I doing this?
Right.
And I think they were just tired of fighting me about everything. So they let me quit after 9 months. And I think I was 6 years old or 7 years old at the time. So I didn't learn anything during that time. And I begrudge them that they... Right. I'm not big into forcing your kids to do stuff that you want them to do. But there are certain things that I feel like are valuable that a kid can't see. And I think music is one of those things. It develops your brain. It enriches your life.
Yep. That's how I feel about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And then, if my kid hated it and cried every day and I really was forcing him, then I wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've tried out swimming. He's like, I don't like swimming. You know, we try surfing. Mm. My older one's like, I don't like surfing. I don't want to go in the ocean. I like the beach. I hardly like the beach. I'm not an ocean guy, okay? Don't take me surfing. All right.
Okay.
Fine. You know, you're adamant about it.
Yeah.
But I agree in going with what your kids' interests are. I do think it's important to force your kids into things and then see how it takes.
To try it.
But I think the skill of a musician, playing piano and I learned guitar in eighth or ninth grade and I'm grateful for it. But I learned on my own. Like I asked to learn, I didn't. But and jiu-jitsu, I think you build some fundamental foundations and you wire your brain for some skills that you take with you probably the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So tell me about your piano playing. How often are you going to class? I know you got your little boy into class and then you were inspired for you to start doing some piano.
Yeah, so that's what it was. So my decision to put my son in piano lessons was for his benefit, but I was also very intentional to say, I'm not doing this with him because I feel like I missed this opportunity myself. And I would like to learn the piano, and so I too... I'm going to take piano lessons for me. And I said, and hopefully I'll be a role model to him in the sense that, like, I'll show him that, like, everyone practices. And this isn't something parents make kids do.
Right.
That if you want to get better at something, you got to put in the work.
Right.
So I hopped on OfferUp and I searched for Yamaha pianos. And I learned way more about the used piano market than I ever wanted to know. Because that's the kind of person I am. I in-depth research on anything it's before true. I make any moves. I found a piano out in Saratoga. It was a man who was the original owner. He bought it for his kids. They moved on to college and they were moving. I paid $3,000 for it. I think $3,500 for a Yamaha U1. It's a studio upright piano. Paid a guy in Boulder Creek to move it with his truck. Man, I don't know if you've ever seen piano movers, how they do this. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a whole situation of like rolling carts and dollies and artificial steps. They would like, they strapped the whole thing down with belts. I've got like 15 steps up to my front door. And they would rock the piano back on its like heel and slide it forward over the first step and then rock it up. They would insert an artificial step on the step below to make a like a larger scale flat platform to balance the piano, to rock it back again and up and down and up and down. $500
Damn.
I paid to... Get so it. I was into this for $4,000 when it was all said and done.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you have that... yeah, you have those steps leading up to your front door.
Yeah, no, it's like a spiral staircase-looking thing coming up. It was impressive to
Good
watch.
Good for you.
I tipped the guy $100 when it was done. He did a great job.
Good man.
Yep.
Wow. So you're not only a piano player, but clearly you're an affluent piano player.
Hey, like. I don't do anything halfway. my piano is sitting in my living room. It's really nice, and I play it every single day.
Good for you. What are you working on right now?
So I'm playing the gospel blues. So I'm currently playing Misty, and then there's a book of like beginner, intermediate gospel classics.
Good for you.
So basic chord progressions with the Mixolydian scale on the right hand for those musicians out there listening to this.
Right on.
Yeah, no, it's cool, man. I started in October, and I would say what I'm most proud about is watching my son figure it out. I think I told you this the other day. My son doesn't know. He's 5 years old. He doesn't know how to read yet. Like he's starting to put letters together and make the sounds of the letters and figure out the words. But he cannot pick up a book and read.
No.
But he's like, through practice and hard work, he is now sitting in front of like a kid's beginning piano book and looking at it and identifying which notes or which keys on the musical staff.
How cool!
And he can look there and he can thumb out and play basic songs without me telling him. So he can read music, but he can't read books. It's really cool.
I bet you swell with pride watching.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. It's like highlight of my day whenever he does that.
That's so cool.
I'd like to shout out if you're local here in Santa Cruz, the Mountain Music School in Scotts Valley. The owner, Sydney Gorham, she's doing a really wonderful job. Kids and adults. I take my son in there at 2 o'clock, and there's like an older gentleman that comes in and is taking vocal jazz lessons. He's probably 60 years old. It's really cool.
So, dude,
it's never too late to learn.
I love jazz. I do. I don't know if I love it, but I like it a lot. I like Dave Brubeck. I like Vince Guaraldi.
Oh, yeah.
I like Thelonious. I like John Coltrane for the most part. Miles Davis. I like Miles Ahead album, Kind of Blue. I like Sketches of Spain. I don't like avant-garde, and I certainly don't like late 70s, early 80s Miles Davis.
Yeah.
It gets kind of lame. But I hate it when someone's singing. Like, jazz vocalist is like the lamest.
You're not into scatting. We've talked about this on the show.
Have we?
You're not into scatting.
Oh, God. Yeah. Like, I go, I don't even want to say her name right now, but Alexa, skip this song. Don't play this song again, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
At Wes Montgomery's school, jazz guitar is pretty rad, too. See? Anyway.
Man. I'm playing some Miles Davis right now off of Some Kind of Blue.
Yeah.
I'm playing Freddy Freeloader right now, which is like just a classic standard, just loops on a 12 bar. And so I'll turn that on in my living room through like the surround Sonos.
Yeah.
And I'll just play the chords in different progressions and take solos on the way. And trying to develop like the brain, like the synapses to connect the left and the right hand. So I can do different rhythms in different hands. Sometimes when my family's out, like I'll turn that on.
Good
and
for you.
I'll sit there for 45 minutes on loop.
Alexa, play Freddy Freeloader by Miles Davis.
Here's Freddy Freeloader by Miles Davis, featuring John Coltrane and others on Amazon Music.
Alexa, turn it up to 10.
Spinal Tap.
Oh, it's a good one. I like John Coltrane. Saxophone.
I thought you were going to start scatting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Alexa, turn it off. Thank
you. So that's what I'm working on, man. And I'm having a blast. So, which kind of leads me into our talk about surfing.
Go ahead.
As a midlife surfer, that I have been putting so much more time into playing the piano than I am to surfing that I haven't been in the water very much.
That's perfect for a surf podcast. That's why exactly why I do one.
Well, so this is what I was going to say, though, as a midlife surfer, is that, you know, my relationship with surfing is lifelong.
Yep.
And will be ongoing, and there will be highs and lows. And I know that at some point I'm going to paddle out at Privates or the Lane on an uncrowded, nice offshore morning and get even just one wave. It's only going to take one wave. I'm going to get one wave, and I'm going to say to myself, fuck, man, I got to do this tomorrow and the next day, and then it'll be back on.
Yeah.
And I just know that that will happen.
I think it's healthy to take breaks. And to go with it. You know, if you're not into something, you kind of take a break from it. I'm really into longboarding right now.
I love
it. I do my wave key. Speaking of left-right brain stuff, you know, Brad Gerlach on the wave key will tell you to pop up a switch stance, you know, and so I'll do that. You know, every other takeoff, I'll do a switch stance one, too, just to wire your brain.
Sure.
Did you hear the Ombi interview I did last pod by chance?
No, I didn't.
Luke Hardacre, OmbiSurf.com, super cool guy. He was over in the UK, he's an Australian, and he gave a lot of good surfing tips to
me. Oh, cool.
And we talked about, he's like, well, what do you, right? I was about to finish the pod. He goes, well, what do you want to work on? And I was like, oh, you're asking me right now? Like, what? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, I want a nose ride, you know?
Yeah.
And cross step better. And, you know, more or less, in the end, it's all about like trying to stay in the pocket. Like what he was talking about was like knowing where you are in the wave. Because more often than not, I'll take off and then I'll just pump down the line.
Yeah.
Try to leave. You feel like the white water's right behind you, chasing you down. Mm-hmm. You have more time, usually, unless you're surfing certain waves, but you have more time than you think to take off slower and to slow down and let that white water catch up to you. So you're now in the pocket. And until you're in the pocket, you can't really nose ride. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I don't know, for me. And I've been working on that. But I don't know. Shoot, like to your point, like being an adult and learning something, that's really cool. Learn anything. Pick up some new skill. It's a good exercise for your brain, and it kind of gives you a reason to live a little bit. Like it's like something new, a new frontier to explore. It's something new to be, you know, to be excited about. So you have been. When was the last time you surfed?
I surfed this last week.
Oh, cool.
I went and I surfed. I surfed Steamer Lane, Middle Peak on a low tide.
Nice.
Hopped off the cliff there, paddled around the back. Immediately got caught inside on a big roll through set. And it was interesting. The first wave I took, the first wave that came through that, it took me off my board. Like it just got stuck inside. I got pushed under. I took a nice big breath before I went down, and I just felt like I got pushed down further and further. Just relaxed my body. Trying to find my Zen moment, like, you know, don't, if you start struggling underwater to swim up, you use all your energy and your oxygen, and suddenly you feel out of breath, just going with the flow, letting it push me, and I'm not coming up. And I'm like, I feel like I should have been at the surface already.
What board are you on?
You know, I was on that GDG, on that goddamn glider.
Right and on, you're on your 11.0 source glider.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It.
And so that thing's like tombstoning right now while you're trying to zen out underwater.
Probably.
Maybe whacking a shortboarder in the head or something.
It is possible. And so I'm waiting to come up, and I'm just not coming up. And eventually, I kind of start feeling a little panic. And part of it's because I've been out of the water for like 3 weeks. I'm like, man, I'm out of shape.
How do you not feel panic at some point?
And I finally came up and this big breath. And I thought to myself, I'm like, man, you got to start exercising more. And so I got out and around. And this was making me laugh because I've come on this show a couple times recently and expressed that I've had like these altercations in the lineup.
Right.
I had another one. And I haven't told you about it because I knew you'd want to hear about it on the cap. This one's minor, but this was funny. So I made it around the outside, after getting held inside, and I'm paddling around the outside of the break, and a set comes through. And I'm paddling off the shoulder, and there's this guy on a longboard paddling into one of these middle peak waves. But he's not paddling perpendicular to the wave. He's angling himself in diagonally so he can pop up to his feet and already. So he's avoiding making a bottom turn is what he's doing. And he's angling himself right at me. And I'm paddling around the outside of the shoulder. And he could easily straighten out and go perpendicular. He's got tons of time to pop to his feet, make a nice bottom turn. He's in the absolute right spot. But he's paddling himself like into the shoulder of the wave for a softer entry. And he's not slowing down. And he's kind of gunning right at me. And like, he's coming at me, he's coming at me.
He's paddling right now. Has he caught the wave yet?
He hasn't caught the wave, he's on the precipice. I can see it coming. And
I'm like, scratching to get out of his way.
Yeah, I'm scratching to get, I'm doing what you should do, in my opinion, trying to get around the outside.
Right.
And it comes to the point where he's close enough to me, I drop the tail of my board and I pick up my feet because he's going to run over my feet.
Right.
And he kind of goes into the wave, picks him up, and he falls over.
Good.
And he pops up and he starts talking shit to me. He's like, "Hey man, you gotta get out of the way." And like, I kind of like turn around. I was like, "Are you talking to me?" And he's like, "Yeah, you gotta get out of the way." And I ask him, like, "Where do you want me to go? Like, I'm paddling around the outside of the shoulder." And he's like, "At that point, you just gotta take it on the head and take the white water." And I told him, I was like, "That would be true if this wave had broken, but like the wave wasn't even broken. Like, you could have trimmed left, like." Don't look at me because you're paddling into the shoulder on a horizontal.
Right.
Like, if you think that I am the reason that you missed that wave, you are sorely mistaken, you goofball. And yeah. I just paddled off.
Good.
And he was all annoyed and like paddled over to talk some shit to his friends.
Theoretically, he's right. Like,
sure.
And for anyone listening, someone's coming down the line. You think you paddle to the shoulder as they're coming at you. And I've made the mistake of thinking I had time to make it before the surfer, but the surfer was going a lot faster and we crashed. The first time I ever took out my Timber Surfco Simmons, freaking do it on a magic model. Great, nice guy too. Luckily, he was a nice guy. Put his center fin right into the board. And luckily it wasn't my head. But that was because I made the mistake. I should have turned toward that white water and paddled into that and taken it on the head.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this where like it is, the onus is on the surfer to get out of the way. Like, not the surfer on the wave, the surfer paddling out. And your responsibility is to make a definitive action.
A positive action.
Whether you can get around the shoulder and out of the way, or if you see, hey, I'm in the wrong spot, I got to take it on the head and wear it.
Right.
So this guy, but then there are times when you realize, hey, if I head back towards the wash, he's already out on the shoulder, he's coming back.
Right.
And so you kind of got to source it out. But this was an unbroken wave that he hadn't caught, and it was probably, by the time it was crested and like properly breaking on a board the length that he was riding, he would have been up to his feet, but it would have been 15, 20 yards inside of both of us.
Right.
And so I was like, this ain't it, bro. Like this, you're paddling in a strange fashion. God. Like this is.
I love how you always have confrontations in the water.
I don't understand.
I was walking with my wife. We were going on a walk just like 2 days ago. I have a confrontation I need to share.
I want to hear it.
And it's not surf related.
You and Darcy got in a fight?
No, it was nothing of that sort. Darcy wasn't there for this, but I was actually telling Darcy, I like how Eric, you're soft spoken. I mean, you're a verbose guy, which is a good thing, but you're kind-hearted. You're not confrontational. You get along to get along. But I do like how you have a backbone and how if someone fucks with you and it's wrong, you will stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
And you either know you have it or you don't, and you really don't know it until you're in a situation.
Sure.
So, for instance, my wife's gotten mad at me because I'll yell at cars. I never knew how fast cars drove down residential streets until you have kids.
Yeah.
And especially my squirrely five-year-old, who I've seen walk in the street and not look both ways.
Wants to get the soccer ball or whatever.
Shit out of me. Disclaimer to everyone listening. I've known a handful of kids through my life that have been hit and killed by cars. And if there's one thing I'm most paranoid about, to the point where my wife says I'm like overly paranoid, it's a mistake you only make once. And it breaks my heart to say it, but I don't want that to happen to my kids, obviously. So I've gone like, slow down! I've ran in front of cars and screamed at them, and then the guy hits the gas and buzzes by me, and then I'm really enraged, you know? And, you know, while my kids are playing out front, and well, so anyway, I guess you either... That, and I don't fight. Like, I'm not a fighter, right? I'm the kind of guy who would get all worked up and get my ass kicked, probably. But I feel like you got it when it's righteous, you got to freaking speak up.
Sure.
Right? So you tell me what you think of this. This is a Christmas-related story, probably December 14th or so. Beautiful Sunday morning. My buddy my buddy and I, he has two daughters that are the same age of my boys, respectively, and we are doing breakfast at a golf at a country club at a golf course, let's say, right, mm-hmm. which is where we were. Big Christmas tree set up. It's decorated. Christmas music's on. It's Christmas time in the city. It's foggy, dude. It's like really foggy. There's a thick winter fog that's sitting over the first hole, you know, and where we're eating breakfast is overlooking this beautiful bucolic first hole in Santa Cruz. And we were the first ones in the restaurant, probably around 8:30, 9-ish or so. Mm-hmm. And so that probably informed how we were letting our kids behave. It's a big open restaurant, big open hall. You know, picture most golf, you know, courses, you know, where there's the pro shop and then there's the restaurant. It's usually it's that commercial carpeting. The ceilings are high. There's a fire going in the fireplace. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of let our kids like dick around a little bit.
There's no one there for them to annoy, so they get a longer leash.
Precisely. There's a little conference room or kind of a banquet room that has a couch and they're playing. Drum. Servers don't mind.
They're being kids, man. God bless them.
Not bothering anybody.
Yeah.
And I get it. You don't want your kids misbehaving at a restaurant.
Sure.
You gotta teach them some etiquette at a restaurant. But in this case, we weren't bothering anybody.
Yeah.
And they're four, you know, we're talking four kids ranging from age 5 through 8.
Yeah.
And they're all friends. So they're playing. So me and my buddy have breakfast and the kids eat as well. You know, little Dano brings up, you know, a flashlight and whatever toy he has with them.
Sure.
He's playing with that too. And they all come and they eat. And as we're eating, the restaurant starts to fill up, right? More, you know, basically it's now it's to the point where it's like 60-70% capacity. Okay. So now 8:30 has turned into approximately 9:45, 10-ish right now.
Yeah.
You know, Sunday brunch time, Christmas music's going, everything is nice and pretty. And our, we are guilty of this. I'll admit this. Dinner ended. The kids left the table. And now they're kind of running around the restaurant a little bit, right?
Sure.
My buddy and I are exhausted. Our wives have been gone all weekend on some like fabulous trip where they're hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
We've been watching the kids. They're coming home that day. And so we're celebrating a nice weekend where we did our jobs as good dads and good husbands, where we, you know, watched the kids all weekend and our wives had a great time together. And they kind of like, I guess they're kind of like walking or running around our table and then going out to a balcony at the golf course and then running around that balcony and walking through another door. Every time that door opens, there's a gust of cold wind that comes through, right?
Sure.
Had I been sitting next to that door, I would have been annoyed at these parents that have let their kids rage around this restaurant.
Sure.
So there's that, and I'd fully admit to that. And so we're talking, my friend and I, and an older gentleman, probably the age 60, 65 or so, starts storming over to our table, okay? And the kids happen to kind of be by the table. And he goes, you know, your kids are really just, they need to sit down. They're running around, they're bothering everybody at this. And I turn to my kids specifically, I go, hey, listen to him. Because I like it when other people scold my kids because I listen to them more than they do, more often than not sometimes. And I say, listen to him, giving this guy the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah.
He goes, your kids are running around. They're bothering everybody, all right? And I'm absolutely sick of it. And he kind of just raised his voice a little too much.
Yeah.
And my buddy who's sitting next to me, who's no punk, he goes, hey, you don't have to talk to us that way.
Yeah.
I understand. You don't have to talk to us that way. He goes, yeah, well, I'm really sick of your kids, blah, 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 blah. In this kind of real forceful way.
Yeah.
And you know, you ever have that surreal experience where as it's happening, you're like, in my head, I'm like, I defer. I always give people the benefit of the doubt that they're coming from a nice place. Or, you know, I just give him the benefit of the doubt. But as he's speaking to me, I'm like,
fuck this guy.
Exactly. The way he's talking to me.
Yeah.
And even still, not going to be like,
yeah, fuck you.
And this
dude,
guy,
yeah,
this fucking smirk.
You're like, he's right.
Not proud.
But he's being a dick.
Not being proud. Yeah. Not being a dick. He's got a good point. You're right. I go, kids, come on. Listen to him. Calm down. He keeps yapping at us. At this point, now I don't hear a word he's saying.
Yeah.
And he's blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, and my buddy goes, okay, it's cool. You don't have to talk to us that way. But we got it. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, we hear you. I got it.
They won't do it anymore.
Keeps talking again. I say, finally, I go, hey, we got it, man. He goes, okay, yeah, you better have it. Something like that. I go, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
He turns around. He's walking back to his table. He goes, Merry Christmas, fuckers. And for better or worse, Merry Christmas. He walks back, Merry Christmas, fuckers. I immediately stood up and I go, what'd you say, mother? And it was like, and my friend stands up at the same time. It was like a record scratched at the country club. And now, you know, the Vince Guaraldi music's playing in the background. Everyone freezes in the place. Record scratch.
Yeah.
And both of us get up and follow him back to the table. And I don't even know what I said. You don't fucking talk to me that way. He sits down at the table and my friend standing right there. And he goes, go outside with me right now. Let's go outside right now. Go outside right now. And the mom and his wife and the other couple at the table are sitting there absolutely shell-shocked. And this guy had nothing to say anymore. And I'm shaking, standing there. And the wife looks at my buddy and goes, just don't hurt him, please. And the whole restaurant, I'm looking at like the bar, it's like a Western film, like where the doors are swinging. The bartender has like a glass, like he's half dried, like staring at me.
Tumbleweed goes
now,
rolling through.
All of a sudden, I look around, I look, and there's my kids, Joe, the two girls, and Daniel. They're kind of like hiding behind the wall. They ran and they're like watching. And I just lost it because it was so freaking rude.
Yeah.
That I tried to defuse it and he just couldn't let it go. And this old guy, the main word I felt was entitled. He felt entitled and he just didn't know that you can't, he just thought he was going to get away with just talking to us that way. And I wasn't proud of that moment. And then I'm just standing, we're hovering over him. And all of a sudden the room's looking at me and I kind of look around and I'm shaking. My buddy is too. He goes, go outside with me right now. Go outside with me right now. And the guy's like, not saying anything, like looking at us, kind of shell-shocked, like, oh shit. Like I said fuck to the wrong people.
Yeah.
And I go, I said something like that. I go, you don't know who the fuck you're talking to. And what I meant was, I'm not important, but like, you thought you were just going to get away with telling me to fuck off in front of my kids, didn't you?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, who are you then? Who are you? And then it was just quiet. And I look around and I go, I just turn around, head back. I'm shaking. My buddy, he goes like, he just throws the card at the server. He goes like, we'll close out. He's like, Jeff, don't worry about it. I'm trying to like figure out like my kids' toys and stuff. And the whole place is quiet. The Christmas music's going, the beautiful Christmas tree. And this brunch just turned into this huge confrontation, man. And I turn, there was this nice mom, her daughter, and her daughter, three generations having brunch at the table adjacent to us. And I looked at them and go, I go, I'm sorry about that. And this is when I felt a little bit better. They go, no, it's totally fine. You know, and it's either they had my back on that or they're just like, don't yell at anybody else in here. Just leave. And I'm shaking. And she goes, don't forget your son's toy right there, like on the table. And I'm like, thank you. I snatched it. We walked out of there and the server ran out after us. He's like, what happened? And then my buddy tells him like, look, our kids were running around. We get it. He told us. And then he had to start cussing in front of our kids in front of us, which I had cut, you know.
Yeah.
And he was like, absolutely, you know. And all told, like, we weren't, I don't think we're the villains in this situation. Like the way you read the room and the way the manager came out too and said, hey guys, they apologized to us. Sorry about that.
Sure.
But, anyway, that was my confrontation. As I tell it, I wish you were there to see it.
That's a good one, man. It's a good one.
It was like, oh, man. And it's like, it was so embarrassing. And I'm so glad my wife wasn't there.
I would have loved to be having brunch in that restaurant to watch that thing unfold.
Anyway, I thought you'd enjoy that.
No, I love it, man. Well, like, this guy wanted the smoke, but he wasn't ready for the smoke.
I guess so. And I don't want any smoke. And I'm not going to fight. But when someone just mouths off to you like that, at some point, you got to just have a backbone.
Sure.
At least... maybe I'm misusing the term backbone. I know, like, Adam Carolla always said, always have a fuck you cocked and loaded in your pocket because it's going to catch someone off guard. If someone wants to be rude to you and you just say, you know what, like, you stand up for yourself in an instant and look in their eyes when you do it, you'd be shocked at how many people, I say back down as if I'm bullying, but I don't mean it that way.
It feels good.
We weren't the aggressors at all. And it wasn't until I said, okay, Merry Christmas. And he goes, yeah, Merry Christmas, fucker. That was like, and then the way I was surprised at how I reacted, but in a way, like my buddy was saying, you know what? That's good your kids saw you do that, dude. You stood up because someone was cussing in front of your kids, and they're going to remember that time that their dad stood up for their kids.
Hell yeah.
Or for himself in front of them. So anyway, that's my confrontation story.
I love it, man.
My buddy was retelling the story the other day to some friends, and one of them goes, "You got to tell that on the podcast," which I was like, "I don't think
so."
No,
it's good, man.
But then now that you're here, I figure I'll share it.
That's life, bro. Well, it's funny because like everyone will tell you like it's nice to be kind to everyone, to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, smile when someone's rude to you, kill them with kindness. And that all sounds good, man. But like if you've ever dropped like a good on someone, man, that shit will help the sun rise. I'm telling you, it just feels right. Like, and he deserved it, man. Like
he did. No, you know, if you saw this old dude and the smug look on his face, and he thought he's going to march over. Maybe he's a member at this country club. Maybe, you know, which I'm not. Neither of us were. He thought he was just going to throw his weight around.
Yeah,
and I honestly, I'm not proud of it, but I did think it was a story worth telling.
No, it is, man. And like he could have. You know, he gave his message, and then that wasn't enough for him. He wanted to tell you what to do, and he wanted to be shitty to you.
And then on its most fundamental level, like as my buddy was retelling the story, what I started laughing at was like, basically he came over and barked at us, mm-hmm. and we stood up and barked back at him like some elephant seals.
Yeah.
And barked him, backed him all the way back down to his table where he sat back down and totally stopped talking.
Yeah.
And the other people at the table, you know, they were thinking like, oh, Carl, why'd you have to go do that?
Sure.
Like, Carl, you had to be the asshole, you know? And he crossed a line by saying, Merry Christmas, fuckers. Like, why do that? I get it. Hey, guys, I get it. You got kids. Every time they're opening that door, this is how I would do it. A gust of wind is blowing through. I'm freezing. Do you mind just keeping them near the table and have them sit down?
Sure.
And I'd be like, you're right. And he was right. Our kids were acting a fool at a restaurant, and we let it get out of hand because we were in conversation.
It's not lost on you.
Exactly. So
you had already told them, hey, guys, listen to the man. Knock it off.
It won't happen again, sir. I remember specifically saying, I understand. They're being too loud. We'll have them sit back down.
Sure.
I get it, man.
And why he couldn't have just said,
couldn't let it go.
Cool. All right. Thank you. Like,
and I guess I was being a smart ass by saying Merry Christmas, but I also wanted to like, I like killing them with kindness, like to say something polite back to somebody.
Yeah. But like, he understands that like, you're not actually being kind, but like, it's not a free pass to call someone a f***er. Like,
it was so good.
I mean, and he can do that, but don't do that and expect to not have a confrontation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to talk that way.
He wanted it and he got it.
He got like, the smoke.
Dude. He got the smoke.
Anyway.
That's a good story.
Thank you. It was pretty funny. My buddy and I have, we've told this, we've laughed at that story a couple times.
I got to bring my kids to brunch with you.
No, you don't.
We could do some damage.
Anyway. So, you were talking about surfing the lane. I went out with the great Alex Savoroco and we did some high tide lane action. I've always been kind of intimidated by steamer lane or the lane. You know, it's like, what's that surf? Like wave, lane. I surfed the lane, bro. And it's not a secret spot, so I don't think I'm blowing anyone.
Yeah. You know,
it was on the WSL tour last year, but was canceled because of COVID in California. They didn't want large gatherings. But nobody was out. It was like Sunday morning. It was like a 5.5 foot tide. It was a painfully high tide.
Yeah.
Wonky as shit.
Swamped out.
I brought my 910 log out there. And there's a spot called the slot that breaks off the rock. Mm-hmm. Rarely are you the only one out where you get to go like paddle out and check out the slot.
Yeah.
Usually it's Daryl Flea, Verosco, and Nat Young and, you know, all the hot shots. Like I'm not rubbing elbows with them in the first place. And some real high performance surfing. I tried to catch one like coming off this, like the first wave that was coming off that rock. Dude, and it freaking cartwheeled me over so fast. Like I've never taken off on the slot. I eventually got one off the slot and I'm on this big nose rider and I wasn't doing any nose riding. I mean, there were some like chest to head high waves that were coming through. But that middle peak, that other peak, I got some of the best waves that I've gotten in so long.
I love that wave.
It felt like the wave was feathering on my head, like it wanted to kind of cover me up. And I did the douchey thing where I had to go back and look on Surfline. And in fact, there was some moments where it looked like I was almost covered up on it. And then immediately I was like, okay, well now I need a longboard that, you know, has some, you know, a hard edge in the rail so I can, you know, go faster, like a more high performance longboard. So I fired off an email to Michel Jeannot. He's got this Easy Rider model that for bigger days he likes, has a little extra kick in the nose and some edge in the back and a smaller, more, not pintail, but a little swallowtail. And I basically ordered a board for him. And then like a week later, like I was like working and I was ruminating on it. I'm doing my family finances. I'm like, God damn it, Jeff, you don't need to spend $1,200 on a new board. So I'm trying to practice some more board discipline. And I resolved myself, I'm not going to buy a new board in 2022.
Okay.
Because let's go through our quiver real quick. I have this beautiful 6'1 high performance Timber Surf Co. chisel that my wife got me for my 40th.
Beautiful board. I'm looking at it right now.
I got
now.
A 6'0 Mini Simmons from Timber Surf Co. I got my 7'0 Speed Seed single fin. It's like a Speed Egg from Michel Jeannot. I got my Ron Regulo Nose Rider from Michel Jeannot. It's 9'10. It's 23.5 wide. It's 3 and God knows what thick. Probably my favorite board. And then I got this 7'10 like kind of gunny, fun boardy thing that my father-in-law had shaped for him. Mm. Kind of a garage backyard builder, has no logo on it. It's a gorgeous board. I'm like, what other boards do I need?
You got to get a glider, man.
That's right.
2023 will have to be the year of the glider.
Glider sounds glider. Fun.
My quiver's unchanged. I mean, we all know that I'm riding that GDG 11.0 Aqua Glider Source Surfboards.
Aqua Glider.
The Aqua Glider.
It's a gorgeous
board. It's the only board I grab. I'll surf the Tenos Sponson Nose Rider. It's got like a... it almost looks like a Hobie Cat. Like if you've ever been on a Hobie Cat sailboat, it's like two side-by-side canoes. The rails are fuller and the concave is so deep, it comes like a rainbow arch concave on the underside of the board.
How the board is shaped underneath it?
Yeah. If you look at it like down from like the nose down, if you lift the board up so you can kind of see from nose to tail on the underside, it has like a big rainbow concave that you can see in these wide, full rails, really stable, shoots water straight down the center of the board, gives it lift and hold and
drive and hold
well I don't know that it drives but it holds and it lifts and so I'll take that board out if you and I are nose riding or attempting to work on our nose riding, usually on like a 3 to 4 foot day, 2 to 4 foot day. I would ride that surfboard. I've got an 8.0 egg that I'll take out if in any situation.
Another source product.
That
board is great.
It is a cool board, and I would take that out on any day in which friends would want to be in shortboarding type conditions.
Right.
So if I'm going to like 2.6 up to Waddell, if I think it's going to be a little more critical, if there's more punch in the waves, I'll surf that egg. But I've really found that in most of those situations, the glider holds similarly and can go fast. So I'm really pressed for like conditions in which I would grab that 8.0 egg.
Because
other boards will work in it. And the last board that I have that I ride occasionally is 9.6 Modernist. Similar to the Easy Rider you're talking about.
Right.
This one happens to be a 2+1, which I think Michel's boards are almost always single fins.
Yeah, he does some 2+1s, but generally single fins. But yours, and I've had, I rode your Modernist at privates on like a 4 or 5 foot day, and I got one of the best rides. And that was the wave in which you blocked. I think you didn't block for me.
I remember
but
this.
It was beautiful communication.
Called you in or?
There's about 1,000 people out in the lineup. Yeah. And I remember paddling and you just go, you're good, you're good. And I never had to worry about someone coming down the line, and I took off and I had a hell of a ride on it.
Yep.
And I love how thick that thing is.
Yeah, it's definitely a full board. It is a performance board. It's got a really sharp rail down in the tail, squash tail. And it can go fast. And it's a board, interestingly, that I've played. I think I put in your Greeno 4A as a single fin into it and surfed it with that. And it surfs completely different as a single fin than it does as a 2+1.
How so?
The 2+1 is really almost skate-like for a longboard in that you can turn it pretty sharply and make maneuvers. But when I put that single fin in with the wider fin base, it became so much more stable and locked in that it was making slower, more circular turns or like rainbow style turns.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would describe it.
Well, but, that single fin, that
less
stylish.
Pumping and more flow.
Yeah.
I felt more stable, more flow.
Right.
It felt more log-like than it did performance with a single fin. That was really interesting. Yeah.
I want a nose ride with you again.
We got to do it, man.
And you know, when there is a bunch of swell, I think there's some more swell coming. Everyone's all pumped to go to the spots where it's going to be like head plus and stuff.
Yeah.
I like going to those longboard spots when there's swell in the water.
Yeah.
Because now you just have like these chest high runners.
Yeah.
And like my nose rider, you know, it's like, that's the day. I don't know. I'm just in longboard mode. I know one thing I like about, sorry to cut you off, but the one thing I like about longboarding too is that I'm less concerned with nailing my take. It's more forgiving, right?
Yeah.
So I have more opportunity. For one, you catch a fuckload more waves. But I have more opportunity to get in the wave and then gather my thoughts. You know, if you listen to my previous app, I recommend you do, because he talks about like the coffee cup, like, you know, holding your backhand, right? You want to lead with your backhand, which forces you to square your shoulders up. And I'm standing up right now in an athletic stance with my shoulders facing forward, right? As I'm on a board. And this is the coffee cup, like where you kind of, you get your elbow up. And then when you pass the coffee cup, like when you go back to do that, you know, when you go cut back, you're almost like trying to like touch that white water with this hand.
Interesting.
And then lean back. And so when I'm up, I'm like, I think to myself, okay, narrow my stance, because, you know, and so I can more often than not, I can get in that poop stance, you know, where your feet are like wider than your shoulders and just like holding on. Especially if I'm on a shortboard, that's probably a little too squirrely for my ability.
The power stance.
Yeah. But on a longboard, like get up, stand straight up, and then start bending, not at the hips, but at your knees, and just getting nice and loose. Mm-hmm. And I can like think about all that, right? And I just have more time to like work on fundamentals, I guess. And I think people think like a longboard means you're a shittier surfer. It is easier to surf.
It's different.
To catch a wave and ride a wave on a longboard than it is on a 6-1 shorty, right? But I could surf that 9-10 the rest of my life and never master it. Like, it's so nuanced. And maybe the viewer doesn't see that, but as a surfer, and everyone who's listening knows what I'm talking about, you feel it. You feel it like when you groove well with the board, or where the whole thing was awkward and clunky.
Yeah.
But when you get like that loose, you know, posture going, and you can start like just pumping up and down the wave, and you just turn, and you just like get really high, and maybe you take a risk on dropping back down, like a steeper drop, and you nail it, and then you come out. Like, that's just the most rewarding thing.
Yeah, so fun.
It makes me think, why aren't I just surfing longboards 100% of the time?
I agree. Like, why aren't you?
I know. I'm 40 years old. I surf 1.5 times a week.
Yeah.
Who knows how many days I have left on this earth?
Sure.
I could bump my head and die like Bob Saget.
Yes. I hope not.
Was that tacky?
Nah.
I wasn't making a joke. But he made a lot of inappropriate jokes. So Bob Saget. God bless Bob Saget.
I think he'd appreciate it.
Speaking of Bob Saget, I wanted to ask you about head trauma, and specifically helmets in the water.
Oh.
And the reason I bring it up is I think it's incredibly practical to wear a helmet surfing. I have never worn a helmet surfing. I have been out surfing solo, Manresa, Waddell, Cayucas, where I thought, you know, I could get smacked in the head, and I have gotten smacked. I have smacked myself in the head and never got knocked out and drowned, and no one would be here to see it. Here I am, a father of two boys. I got a wife. You know, no one wants to die and leave behind, especially you never feel more mortal than when you have kids, right? And the other day, I was talking to my friend Jason, who you've heard on this pod before. We were out in a parking lot and outside of a beach break. And this guy came over, and we were comparing our boards. We were geeking out. Like, he pulled out, he had this 7-0 Maurice Cole Shiva. Cool. It's cool. It's a cool board. It's like pintail. You know what's cool about it is it has a hard edge from nose to tail.
Interesting.
Like a hard edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Maurice Cole, Surf Splendor. You look up Maurice Cole, his interviews. He's an Australian guy. He's got a lot to say. He's a real vulnerable guy. He's very open about his life and stuff. And anyway, and I had my 7-0 Speed Seed, and we were kind of just comparing models, looking at the differences and blah, blah, blah. And then he whips out his, you know, this guy comes over, I guess was one of Jason's friends, and he pulls out his, like, I don't know, like 5-6, like Firewire, Omni, or I don't know what they're called, Omicron model. He's like, he pulls it out, and he's like, we just kind of laughed at the size difference and stuff, you know. And he's like, I kind of want to get one of these. Like, what do you guys think of it? And I'm like, well, I love it, you know. For my abilities, this is like nice, you know. Anyway, we yap, nice guy. And then he's like, cool, nice talking to you. And before he leaves, he goes and grabs a helmet, slaps it on, and then walks down to the beach. And I thought two things. I thought, fuck, that looks dorky.
Yep.
And then my other thought was, he's pretty smart for wearing a helmet in the water. And what he was wearing, I looked up, if you Google surf helmets, one of the things that comes up is called Simba, you know, like Simba the Lion from Lion King.
Yeah.
And it's like a Spartan style helmet.
Okay.
It is so radical. And I mean radical, not in a good way. Like, it's a fierce looking helmet.
Sure.
It kind of looks, it looks like if you're wearing it, you better fucking know how to rip. Like, you better be busting airs and stuff where no one could talk shit to you.
Yeah.
That would not be the case for me. Other surf helmets I see out there is the Gaff helmet, right? From time to time. I look stupid in a helmet generally. But it's my ego that's preventing me from potentially saving head trauma. Your thoughts?
You know, I think everyone's got, there's got to be a few guiding principles in life that you adopt that help you navigate through this world in which you live in. One of these guiding principles that I subscribe to is I firmly believe in fashion over function.
Got it.
I will never wear a helmet. And I know it's a good idea, and it would not negatively impact my surfing. And this is a little bit of a stereotype because, you know, you could pull up examples of pro surfers that are really good, that rip, that will surf infinitely better than me, that wear helmets. But if I paddle out and I see you in a helmet, I just assume that you're probably going to drop in on me at some point during the day.
Like, well, why do you assume that? Meaning like you're
goofy, you're unaware, you like kind of bouncing around life. I don't know. And it's like, it's not fair, but man, it's just so dorky that you're a dork.
It is.
In my opinion.
It is. And sometimes I convince myself like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get a helmet. Fuck it. You know what? It's dorky and my friends will make fun of me the first two times I do it.
I'll make fun of you every time.
Thank you. Yeah. And I was looking at helmets online. You know what I was thinking? Like, I got another cool wetsuit idea, dude. Like for my hood. Yeah, I like wearing a hood because I have surfer's ear.
Sure.
And it does protect the wind. What about a little extra, little padding? I almost wear the hood for head protection.
Sure.
Because remember I cut my head at Waddell?
Yeah.
You didn't see it happen, but I met you in the parking lot.
Yeah, you told me.
I was running back to the car to look at it in the mirror to make sure I didn't need stitches. And I kind of dabbed it and it stopped bleeding. But if I had my hood on, it would have cut my wetsuit, but it probably wouldn't have cut my skin.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was late at night laying in my bed, just like everyone listening to this does, where you're looking at your phone before you go to sleep, and Darcy's looking at her phone, and I'm scrolling through. I'm like, surf helmets. I go, what do you think of this, Darcy? Would you make fun of me if I wore this? And my wife, who's like safety first, you know, she wouldn't let my kids freaking scoot in the front yard without a damn helmet on, which I never wore a helmet. I skated forever, you know, and all my youth, bike riding, nothing. You know, our generation didn't wear it. You're born in 1981. Your parents weren't putting a damn helmet on, you know, when you're 13. She straight up said, yeah, that would look so dorky.
Sure, I'll totally leave you.
She was not into that idea at all.
Yeah. I feel like because I grew up skating too, fashion over function, I would wear the helmet unstrapped.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because strapped looked lame, right? It's like if you fall, that shit's flying off your head.
Anecdotally, did you rock the JanSport with just one strap as well?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. New one every school year.
That's right.
What I would say of helmets, I've been surfing like 17 years or so.
Okay.
I've hit my head one time.
Yeah.
It was at 2.6, and I know, right? And I took a big one on the head and went underwater and was kind of bouncing around like I described earlier, you know, staying calm. And next thing I knew, I was somersaulting and I hit my head on a rock.
Right.
The bottom was like, oh,
that
shit.
That was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. And I remember
fish.
I felt it and I had this moment where I was like, oh, fuck, that's dangerous. Like, I feel fine, but like, that's spooky. And I came up and it had cut me and I kept surfing and I was fine. It wasn't a huge deal, but I felt like I was like, that's how people get knocked out.
Yeah.
But you know, so I think some of it is like, if I'm surfing Capitola, which I love, it's a pretty gentle wave.
Yeah.
And honestly, you could probably get knocked out on a gentle wave.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like the risk is as high surfing Capitola as it is like if you're surfing Pipe, right?
Right. I mean, so like, you see Owen Wright wear a helmet at Pipe.
Exactly. And like Owen Wright is someone that has had a documented history of head injury from like, I think in West Oz or something like that. Took a big one on the head, concussed, was like out for a year.
Right.
So like, look, if you're at Pipeline watching and you see someone in a helmet, like you're not wondering if they know how to surf or not. Like they clearly know how to surf. They're being proactive with their health.
You're not judging someone if they have a helmet at Pipe or Chopu or something.
Yes, but if I'm like surfing jacks and you're wearing a helmet and you're riding like a Walden pop out, like you're a complete kook. And I don't know what I will have to see from you to be convinced otherwise.
Dude.
That's just how I feel about it.
I'm just going to pause real quick
because
my coffee is going through me real quick.
Sure.
Stand by. Okay, wait, hang on. Are we recording again? Yes, I'm back. I went, took a bathroom break, and when I came back, there was some NBA news.
We got breaking news.
Go ahead.
Because you know I love hoops. James Harden is free once again. He has been traded to the Philadelphia 76ers. James Harden and Joel Embiid will team up to try and win a title this year. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who's playing, I think he, Kyrie Irving has, I believe, 13 games left this season that he will be eligible to play.
Is that right?
Correct. Because of the
vaccination
status in Brooklyn.
So Ben Simmons to Brooklyn?
Yep. So Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and two first-round picks are headed to the Brooklyn Nets.
So they had to give two first-round picks to dump Ben Simmons.
The Nets will get the Sixers' 2022 first-round pick unprotected and the right to defer that pick to 23 or 27's first-round picks, protected in positions 1 to 8.
So Ben Simmons is going to Brooklyn. Is Ben Simmons... Well, let me ask this. Does James Harden have many years left on his deal? Do you know?
I think he's got... No, he walks after this year.
So this is like...
Well, this was an opportunity.
It's a loss. This is a loss.
It's a loss for this year, potentially.
It's a loss for the Sixers, obviously. You have all this invested in Ben Simmons, and now he got all weird on you. Eventually, you just got to cut bait with him.
Yeah, but I respect Daryl Morey's not forcing the issue.
Right.
Where, like, it was this standoff, and Morey's like, we're ready to hold out for years.
Except he traded him.
Sure, because he got James Harden.
The same season that he held out.
Sure. But so interesting that James Harden, after this year, would not have been on contract anymore.
Okay.
So there's this pressure for Brooklyn. James Harden saying he wants out. It's, you can trade him and get something now, or you can kind of have this cancerous locker room for the rest of the year. If you don't win the title, it's a fucking bust. And now he's walking in free agency for nothing. So I actually think that pulling Drummond, Seth Curry, and Ben Simmons is a huge haul for Brooklyn.
Yes.
So I think it moves the needle for them to win this
year.
And first round picks.
That's my point. There was a tax that Philly had to pay along with shipping the head case Ben Simmons over to them.
But James Harden, man. Like,
that's a good...
He's a phenomenal
matchup. So now we're looking at... So Seth Curry is a net now?
He's a net now.
Okay, not Steph. Seth.
Seth. A contender.
Formerly of the Santa Cruz Warriors, in fact.
Yep, Santa Cruz Warriors legend.
And so Sixers now have Embiid Harden. That's a cool combo. That's an NBA Jams combo.
That's a great
combo.
So
who else is on the Sixers?
Oh, I'll have to pull it up. But
yeah, it's all right.
Hugely exciting maneuvering.
That's all right. The listenership isn't here to hear our NBA talk, although I like it myself. It's time to get into hoops, dude. I've been in the Niner NFL zone.
Oh, yeah.
Whew. They had the heartbreaker. Jimmy G, God bless him.
God bless him. May he. I wish him well.
I wouldn't have minded if he came back another year or two, honestly.
I won't be shocked if it happens. Just, it's not over till it's over.
That's a good point.
It's not over till
it's over. It sounds like it's over, though.
It does sound like it's over. And he's like, he's gesticulating as though it's over, right? He's essentially said goodbye to the media.
Niners, I think.
Shanahan loves Jimmy G.
God, I thought Jimmy G... All we need someone is to put two hands on the steering wheel, let the running game and the defense do the work, and that's what they did. Don't tell me they couldn't have won a Super Bowl.
So here's a spicy take.
Go.
Jimmy G, quarterbacks are the most valuable position in football.
Maybe in all of sports.
Sure. That's understood and accepted. If the way that Jimmy G played this year, if they gave him a new contract that was equal to his quarterback rating, instead of a $20 million deal, if they gave him like a $4 million deal or some shit like that, based on how he actually played, which will never happen, and then used those assets to buy pieces, the Niners could win for years to come.
I think that's the thing. That's why they're going to trade him, because I think they owe him like $75 million or something nuts.
Has anyone ever done that, though? Like, could we go grab Nick Foles on a 3-year contract for $4 million a year?
Maybe.
And just roll Ryan Fitzpatrick and roll him out and like get all the receivers and linemen in the world and just make, I don't know, probably not.
We got Trey Lance that we're going to probably pay $2 or $3 million a year.
Well, this is when teams win,
they need to
right?
pay Debo, they need to pay Kittle, they need to pay Bosa.
They need to pay Debo. Debo's
the man.
He's a man.
Love Debo.
A man's man. Me too.
Anyway. Well, we're doing Fantasy League again. My team name is CyberDude69. Yours is Glider Lover. And did you watch Pipe?
I did watch Pipe.
I know
Pipe.
You did.
I did watch Pipe.
Kelly Slater won. Moana Jones. Was it Moana Wong's Jones or Moana Wong Jones or Moana Jones Wong?
Don't know. Moana.
Moana.
Make way.
I like
way.
That. Yeah. And then our man, Nat Young, who I was really rooting for. I've mentioned him. Yep. Santa Cruz guy. He made it to the round of 32.
He did.
And he ended up losing to Leo Fioravante in the, I guess, third round of Pipe. And I was stoked to see Nat Young. Nat Young is like 31 years old. He surfed himself off the tour. He was rookie of the year in like 2013 or 14. Surfed off the tour back to the minor leagues. Dicked around forever. Climbed all the way back to make it back to the CT, the championship tour. He did it in a year in which he, I think within like 18 months time, he got married.
Yep.
I could be wrong. I know for this for a fact. His mom passed away, and two months later or so, he had a daughter.
Became a father.
So what a radical, and I know his mom was really close to him based on just a Red Bull docuseries I watched on him once. And I'm just, I've asked him to come on the pod. He's never even responded to my my direct messages, but I'm still, I know he's a really nice guy, and he's a very busy guy, and he's a big timer. I mean, he's a major leaguer, you know, in surfing. So I'm really rooting for him. But we have Sunset coming up. What are you thinking for Sunset? I think Sunset will be going by the time I publish this. What is your philosophy heading into the fantasy competition, Sunset Beach?
Sunset Beach is one of my favorite waves to watch because it's like, it's big, it's burly, the walls are wide. It's not like, Pipe is cool, but Pipe is like a flash in the pan, right? There's like, there's a steep ass drop in a hollow tube, and you get it or you don't. Mm. And Pipe can, and Sunset can throw, and it can provide barrels, but it's these big moving walls of water.
Okay,
there's so much energy. It doesn't. In some ways, it reminds me of watching West Oz, like when things are big, big and unruly, and that's exciting to me. It kind of reminds me of Waimea Bay, like a mini Waimea Bay.
Okay,
and maybe those show waves like aren't a good comparison, like. For our listenership, like, I think everyone will buy that, but like,
right.
Like proper surfers that have been surfing their whole lives that have surfed these waves, they might be like, no, those two aren't the same at all.
Right.
But it just feels like the Wild West of the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
that's what I hear.
And dangerous and energy everywhere. My question is, do you pick Old Man Slades again? Mm. He's on a roll. I like the Idolo's a tier B surfer now.
Yeah. That's cool.
Jordy. Is interesting. Has never seemed to put it together in Hawaii.
So you like that? Sorry to go back with Idolo. He's a tier B surfer, meaning you could throw. Because I think with fantasy, you choose tier A, which is like top five surfers. You could choose among like top five or six surfers. You get two positions you get to choose.
Yep.
I think I'm choosing. I'll tell you. I don't care. I think I'm choosing like Kanoa and I think John again.
Yeah,
John John's my power.
Right? John John's a great pick at a wild and ruly spot for right. sure.
But now you get Idolo down in that second tier,
yeah,
and that's where he mixes with the likes of like Kaloi and Dino.
Yep.
And
if your name is Connor, you're on my team.
You like Connor Coffin too?
Coffin and O'Leary. I picked both of them.
All right on. All right.
That's
well.
Just
I didn't do that bad this time. Usually I really flame out the first. Last year I flamed out like first event.
You made Josh Moniz your power surfer as a wild card. Which honestly, so what I would say is that you could do that again at Sunset if you picked Billy Kemper,
right?
Who's a wild card into the event as your power surfer, and it hit. Fuck, man, you'd be set up.
I'm conservative this time. I noticed the people that win, they don't hit home runs. They just hit singles and doubles.
Sure.
And they pick the most obvious picks. You know what I mean? Like the most obvious surfers to pick.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? Scott Bass and David Lee Scales are talking about the fact that Slater obviously won Pipe, which was really fun to watch. He cried at the end of it.
Yeah.
It was really touching. I really appreciated it. And he beat Seth Moniz, who, by the way, I picked for my Surf Vival. I'm doing the Surf Vival.
Okay.
I recommend doing that next year. You pay $20 and then it's a survival. So, you know, you just pick one surfer to make it to the round of 32 per event. Then you can't pick that surfer ever again. So, like, this time I picked, I think, Jack Robinson.
Yeah, love
for
Jackie
Sunset.
Boy.
I had Kanoa, but then I see like Kanoa's first heat for Sunset's gnarly. Like it's Macinus and then Cowie Belly and also
Man of the People, Cowie Belly.
Yeah, right. I don't even know where I was going with this. Oh, so Slater won, and then he was talking about Sunset, and then like the WSL folks are talking about like, oh, maybe you can make a run at the title and stuff. No one's mentioning the fact, and I'm not making a value judgment either way on this. I don't want to get into that, but that Kelly Slater is vocally unvaccinated for COVID, and per the Australian restrictions, he likely wouldn't even be able to compete there. So, like, could you imagine, like, for instance, you mentioned Kyrie Irving, he can only play 16 games or whatever left. Yeah. Like, that's a big story in the NBA. Kyrie's unvaxxed. He can only play in certain states.
oddly, he can play in California if you're a visiting team, but if you're the home team and you're on Vax, you can't play in your arena. But whatever. That story's being covered by ESPN, by the NBA, by everybody.
It's reality.
WSL totally ignores that story, and that story is such an interesting story. Like, I don't care where you are on the Vax discussion. That's a fucking interesting story.
Should we write the story?
I mean, I guess. Like, it wasn't my point. It's not, I mean,
this is the kind
David Lee Scales and Scott Bass were talking about this, and they discuss it at a way more articulate level than I can, but I just thought that was so lame. You know?
Shaz Smith should write this story.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is too chicken shit.
I guess.
To talk about Kelly Slater or whatever. And it's like, it's not even, you don't even need to write it as a dig to Slater.
It's not a dig, but
you don't need to make, like, take a position on if he should vax or not, or what he thinks about it.
Or anti, right.
The regulations are the regulations.
And it's a stamped story.
It is, and it will absolutely affect who wins the title this year.
How could the league cover this and talk about it without even asking him about it or mentioning it?
Doesn't he own a position in the WSL, Kelly?
Oh, maybe.
I thought he did. Well, I know they've got a partnership with the Wave.
This might be misinformation.
Hey, probably so. Fake news. Fake news is back on the menu, boys.
We don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but that's a good point. I think kind of he may have. I know that his company sponsored like Chopu years ago to Perps, I think it was, or something
Perps
like that.
Perps and Outer Known.
Outer Known was what it was.
In Fiji, I think.
Dude, I bought Perps once. I saw it, and it was horrible.
I bought a bottle at the Scotts Valley Market, and I was like, oh, the Kelly drink.
Me too.
And I was like, this ain't it.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, I'm not into it. Not into it.
Dude, anything purple gives me a headache typically.
Love that color, though.
Purple. You like purple?
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Great.
Your Nose Rider, just to revisit, your Source Nose Rider, it got mixed up on the glass schedule.
Yeah.
It was glassed from a pattern that another lady chose for her custom board. And you lucked out with that.
I did.
Glass job. It is so clean.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, I noticed you got, so what's your lineup look like right
now
for
this
Sunset?
This is my question. I'm going to get some advice from you right now. So tier A, I've got John and Kelly. And I'm on the fence because Kelly surfed amazing at pipe. But I wonder, did he just show up for pipe? And it's not to say, I mean, this is a guy who, like, you know, I would say you shouldn't bet against Kelly, but I haven't started Kelly in 2 years because he's looked...
I've never chosen Kelly
on
my team.
He's looked washed.
I don't think I've ever chosen Kelly one time.
So Kelly absolutely could paddle out and win pipe. Like, for sure.
Obviously.
Sunset.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
He says he hates it, though.
Oh, it's just, okay, there you go.
Talk about a story. That actually is a story, I believe, that he surfs... I don't know if he surfs shitty there. That's
interesting.
I can't say that about Kelly Slater on any wave, but I don't think it's his favorite wave. I don't think he likes it. I don't think he performs well.
So
you should absolutely choose him.
Yeah, I just moved him out of my spot.
Make him
right
your
now
power.
Based on that tip. So I got John and Seth Moniz. I got the Connors, O'Leary and Coffin, Idolo and Jordy in tier B. Other honorable mentions, you got Kolohe, who I don't like.
I love Kolohe.
Zeke Lau.
Yeah.
Who I actually
think... There's a Hawaiian Charger, right?
He's a Hawaiian Charger, and his body type...
He's an ultimate surfer.
So when I think about Sunset, I think about certain surfers that are, like, heavier.
Yeah.
They're
power
stronger
surfers.
Power surfers.
Like Jordy.
I think Jordy. I think Zeke Lau.
Okay.
David
Zimba.
Wade Carmichael.
Ooh, is Wade Carmichael on tour?
Oh, I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
These are the kind of guys that I think about where, like, hey, their body style suited for these, for these gnarlier, crazy waves. But I just don't believe in Zeke Lau. Wasn't he, like, the ultimate?
He was the winner of ABC's Ultimate Surfer.
I didn't watch it a single minute. But he's a guy that I just don't believe in Zeke Lau.
Okay.
I know he's had results. There was a meetup, like a heat with him and John, where he groused John was really paddling right next to him and was hassling him, got in his head, and he won the heat. That was kind of cool. And I kind of think that I like that kind of competitive
Me too.
Surfing.
That's what I like about Gabe Medina.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think you and I are the same, but I love Gabe Medina.
Me too.
And people are like, he's not, he doesn't understand what surfing's about.
Right.
It's like, look, this isn't fucking soul surfing. We're bending the ocean to conform to our minute restrictions and heat. Like,
also, the thing about Gabe Medina, who's apparently skipping this tour due to personal issues, going through a divorce, and who knows what else.
It?
Yeah.
is that Gabe could be a soul surfer if he wanted to as well. Like, he could kind of do all of that.
Sure. Well, he's got a bigger like following, I think, in social media than anyone else on tour.
Is that right?
I think even more than John. That's probably also misinformation. But he's got like millions of followers. He's a big deal in Brazil. Like,
Chad Smith says that the Brazilian tabloids are always talking about him being gay.
Interesting.
Which I thought, how cool would it be? I want him to be gay so bad.
Yeah.
If he came out and was like openly, like, I want to just be public with this and come out of the closet.
Yeah.
Like, and he's so badass. It'd be so cool to have
gay
and be badass and dominate. I would like him 10 times more.
Yeah, for sure. I would be
all
on board.
On gay Gabe. Gay Gabe Medina.
I love it. That's a rumor that I would.
He's a beautiful man too.
I gobble that up, man.
Absolutely.
That would be a great one.
I'd be into that. I miss Gabe Medina.
So there's some other names that I'm looking at. So like I said, I got Connor O'Leary, Connor Coffin, Idolo, and Jordy. Other honorable mentions in Tier B that I may pick. I'll probably change my lineup a few times. I like Griffin, Colapinto. I like Jackie Boy Robinson.
Griffin's not the type of guy that throws his weight around power surfer as you described.
Well,
or is he?
I think he is, though, because Griffin won the Triple Crown. He won the Triple Crown a few years ago.
Yes.
It was this really interesting situation where he resulted well enough at Pipe and I believe it either Haliva or Sunset. I don't recall which one. He scored high enough in the first two that mathematically he won the event. No one else could catch him, even if they took first in the third event. But he didn't have the QS points to even qualify to get into the third event.
Wow.
So like he's looking at a Triple Crown title and they're like, "Oh, but you actually don't get to surf in the third event because you
like a flawed
which
story.
Is so strange, but like he won the Vans Triple Crown. It's like a 17-year-old kid or something like
and
that.
And didn't his brother win the Triple Crown this year?
Oh, did he?
Corey Colapinto?
No, that's the longboarder. Oh. Crosby. Crosby.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know.
Griffin, I'm interested
in. I didn't know show prep for this.
Jack Robinson, I'm interested in. I know we're looking at this right now. And then I actually thought that Tier C was more interesting than Tier B. Kaio Abelli of Surf Splendor's crowdfunding campaign. Is that still going on? No, that's over.
They dropped him.
I donated my
$5. I did too. I think they're disappointed with Kyle's engagement with that sponsorship deal.
Yeah,
what about Nat? I put Nat Young on my team every event this year.
So that was going to be my question for you. Because you would like for him to join you on the Midlife Surfer podcast. And he's probably creeping up on 30, right?
So I think he's like 30 or 31.
Okay. Yeah. So he's maybe a midlife surfer?
Shit. No, he's a world-class surfer, dude.
It's so funny because like I would consider myself a midlife surfer at 35. But like I imagine I'm probably living a lot older.
I think as you said a while ago, it depends on how long you're going to live.
Yeah, for sure. Billy Kemper, Kai Lenny.
Kai Lenny, man. You know he surfs Sunset a lot, I bet.
Yeah.
Right?
I wonder what he'll ride.
A hydrofoil.
That's what I was wondering. I'm waiting for the day that we get footage of someone catching a gnarly barrel on a foil. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. You do?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. They don't excite me.
It's dangerous as fuck.
Foils don't excite me whatsoever.
Foils don't excite... I don't want to try one. I've got no interest in trying one. Yeah. I'm not excited when I see one out in the water.
Yes.
But I see... when you see some footage of Kai Lenny surfing big surf on a regular surfboard, and it just looks so choppy... When you see him flying down the line, you see the nose of the board feathering up, and it feels bouncy. There's so much wind and speed. It's not like this locked-in carving thing. It looks like the wind just wants to shoot him up into the air, pull him off the wave. But when he gets on that foil, it seems so smooth and powerful on these massive waves. It's intriguing to me to see the condensed footage of someone ripping on a monster wave on a foil. But I want to see someone get back in the pocket and like just get a proper cover up on a foil. Like I'm like soaring out like an airplane. Mm. I think that'd be so fucking cool to see.
We've talked about this before. Back to Corey Colapinto. Cucapinto on
Cucapinto.
Instagram. I don't know what the hell wave he surfs, but it's always drone footage.
Yeah.
And he's always by himself. And it's always like the best wave I've ever seen.
It looks like San Onofre, like it's old like, man's.
Yes. It's like a total longboard, like Cowles type, like knee high Waikiki. Like runner that goes like 300 yards peeling to the left. I'd prefer peel to the right, but no one's out. And I'm like, where is this guy scoring like this and how?
And he'll take the wave like 100 yards left and then like spins around and goes 300 yards right.
That's
like it just reforms and just goes and goes and goes. It does look cool. you see footage of him and his friends out there, and you get these nostalgic flashbacks of what it would have been like to be a kid, not a care in the world, surfing in sunny San Clemente, California, getting a burrito at Pedro's Tacos or some shit like that. Life is good.
I always appreciate having you on. You always have a good opinion. You always have an opinion. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And you're articulate. Yeah, whether it's good or bad, that doesn't matter. And thank you. Listeners can donate to the show at midlifesurfer.com. And I'll say between now and the next episode, any donation that's received is going to 100% go to Eric.
Hey.
So let's see if we can make you $20 or something.
Hey, all right? I appreciate because that.
People ask for Eric to come on. And if you want to show your appreciation for Eric, let's do that. Adam Montiel won't get anything. He's going to work for free.
Appreciate it, Adam.
I'll work for free. So try to donate at least $1. You could donate $1 if you'd like.
That was
and I will Venmo it straight to Eric Jett's Venmo account.
That was Adam Montiel of the Where Wine Takes You podcast.
Where Wine Takes You. Yeah. And that wine podcast has kicked my pod's ass to such a degree, it's hilarious. But that's okay, because I love Adam, and he's a good man.
Yeah, so he's a true pro.
If you like wine, if you like California wine, and he's just funny, check out Adam Montiel's.
Montiel.
Adam Montiel. That's what I say. He should do his name. Where Wine Takes You podcast. And midlifesurfer.com. You could donate. Timbersurfco.com, friend of the show. Check out his Reclaim Lumber, all of his good stuff. Uroko, U-R-O-K-O, cool ass clothing. The shirt, just check out the artwork. It's real subtle. Alex Checks, the man. I'm gonna have him on the pod hopefully next episode. He wants to come on, and in fact, he has some giveaways in store for listeners as well too.
Oh, I like it.
And then now we're just citing stuff. MountainsToSea.org, MTNS, the number 2, SEA.org. That's my man Brian King. He does a nonprofit with his wife where they take troubled youth, basically, or youth that not necessarily troubled, but they don't get opportunities to go hiking or to go surfing or to go sailing. He gets them out on the water and shows them a different part of life that maybe they may or may not have never seen. So if you want to kick a couple bucks that way too, and then other than that, you got anything nice to say to the listener before we leave?
God bless you. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Be kind to one another.
Be kind.
Dope city, bitch.
Anyway, peace and love, peace and love.